As with any message about trees, I will start in the most logical of places. The superhero movie, The Avengers, Infinity War. In it, the bad guy, Thanos, plots to gather the power to destroy half of all life in the universe. His goal, to maintain balance. When he collects the power he seeks, he can end all of that life with a snap of his fingers. Spoiler alert. Thanos succeeds in gathering the power, snapping his fingers, and ending half of all the life in the universe. Half the Avengers disappear, half the humans disappear, but the only tree we see fade into dust is an alien Avenger tree, Groot. Richard Rohr teaches that the way we do one thing is the way we do everything. Watching the credits of any Avengers movie, it is clear that literally thousands of eyes worked to create this movie, yet none of them stopped and said, if half of all the life on Earth were wiped out, the plants and trees would need to go as well. All the background scenery stays intact. It seems plants and trees are mere objects and ornaments, scenes à faire in a drama about saving half of all life. While the example seems silly, it does illustrate a larger point. When it comes to trees and other plants, our society generally doesn't see them as living beings. I have been as guilty as anyone of this. It wasn't until a few years ago I recognized the life, the true living beingness of trees. My first tree friend was a lonely cottonwood in New Mexico I creatively named Cotton. I sat down at Cotton's base and just spoke my truth, my whole vulnerable truth. I gave Cotton my authenticity. After about 40 minutes of that, I started to sense something from this tree. It didn't want me to go. I quieted myself enough to finally listen. It felt like I grew the ears to hear what could not be heard. So I stayed and made a friend for life. Trees are alive and social. Trees can be friends. As of today, I have befriended over a dozen trees. Is it all projection on my part? Maybe. But the energy around these trees sure has me fooled. My friends have personality. Our exchanges are spiritual and profoundly connective. Authentically connective. Moving to Berkeley a few months ago, I have had the pleasure of making new friends here. Near the corner of Addison and Grant, there is a large redwood tree named Big Ben. I visit him every day. On cold nights, I inhale right next to his trunk. And his life warms my blood. He is a healer tree. He can sense when my body is not right and sends rooted, stabilizing healing to wherever is needed, graciously and proactively. Big Ben rewards my visit with his giant presence, providing a gentle, spiritual pat on the head. A thank you for visiting. Then there's a grove of redwoods on the UC campus I affectionately call the real redwoods of UCB. They send me feminine, inclusive energy, but they also have some edge, preferring to listen to the power of the heavy metal in my ear pods than some of the softer options. Their presence is more collective than individually sensed, their roots and lives so entwined. And then there is Wally. Wally! Wally is short for Walmart, and he lives on an island in a roundabout near the northwest portion of campus. Now, why would I name a tree Walmart? As some of you may know, Walmarts provide a safe space for RV drivers to park overnight in their lots. Now, people talk about carrying around emotional or life baggage, but I see myself more like a spiritual RV. I have a whole home of stuff I carry with me everywhere I go. But when I arrive at Wally, he is always ready to receive me and my RV of emotional weight. He is that safe place to park at night. He sees me right where I am and accepts me, safely and calmly. For better or worse, the trees see through my projections and pleasantries, revealing, for better or worse, my authentic self, whomever that may be at that moment. All I try and do is return the gaze and see them the same way, as living, authentic beings. One of my favorite experiences of this year was reading Peter Wallenben's The Hidden Life of Trees. He explained so much of what I had intuited already from my interactions and expanded my understanding even more. Trees are social beings that connect through scents and fungal networks underground. They can share resources, nurture their young, warn of predators, even keep dying trees alive. There are hub trees that act as wardens for the forest, producing more resources than they need and distributing them amongst other friendly trees. Wally is one of these wardens. The book also teaches how intricately these networks, sometimes called the Wood Wide Web, work together in the natural setting of a forest. Most trees are meant to live in a forest, and as a result, their natural growth patterns require that environment and balance. The forest regulates growth, which leads to building stronger tissue and an increased lifespan. Generally, trees around us in our cities and neighborhoods don't exist as part of a forest, and they grow unhealthy and die prematurely as a result of this imbalanced existence. They essentially get pumped full of sun, water, and food, so they grow unnaturally quickly. Almost like pumping a chicken in a cage full of food and growth hormones. Wallenben's book and my social connection to trees made me consider our societal attitudes toward plant life in our cities and neighborhoods. One day, I stepped out of a UPS in San Francisco to the sounds of a chipper. Jim's Tree Design was removing all of the large branches from an otherwise unbothered tree and grinding them to pulp. I was struck by the barbarism of this entire life cycle. This tree didn't get raised in a forest among its brothers and sisters and ancestors. It was placed, secluded in a concrete pit, fed gluttonously by us to grow as quickly as possible, only to then have us decide one day, we don't like the way you grew, it is inconvenient, and we mutilate it back to where we want it to be. This may sound heavy-handed, but is it? Just because the tree doesn't have eyes to cry or a mouth to scream, does their pain, their life, not matter? I asked the trees in the Cascade Mountains of Washington what they thought about this message I'm delivering today, about proving their livelihood to humanity. And their only response was, what more do we need to do? What more do we need to do? Okay, let's run a thought experiment. What if we gave trees eyes and a mouth? Would we feel differently? Let's pretend there is a new scene in Avengers Infinity War. Thanos, the bad guy, has captured Groot, our lovable alien tree Avenger. Thanos decides to keep Groot as a pet and force feed him into continuous growth. But Groot has grown too big for Thanos' cage. Thanos begins ripping limbs off of Groot one by one to box him back into his place. Groot screams out in pain in the one word he can say. Groot! 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 Oozing pieces of Groot fall to the floor as he wails. Alien tree blood pours out of his wounds and covers Thanos' indifferent face. All of the critics and audience agree. That was so brutal and unnecessary. Disgusting Tarantino-style torture. Nobody wanted that. The movie even is given an R rating because such cruelty on screen would not be appropriate for children. Thanos has proven to be the villain with such a barbarous act. We watch this type of mutilation on our streets every day. Trees grown too big for the cages we've created, cut down to size. We see it coming out of the UPS store. From what I have seen of trees, they are just as infinite, just as much grace-filled wonders of this universe as any alien hero tree we can dream up. Being is not exclusive to those of us with eyes and a mouth. It brings me back to Rohr's statement, the way we do one thing is the way we do everything. I'm afraid that the trees, because they are not part of their natural forest unit, live disconnected, invisible lives. Lonely, imbalanced lives in our human society that ignores them. Unfortunately, this is not exclusive to the trees. I feel like our cities try and grow its human youth in the same unnatural way. Divorced from our natural social clan units, city life idealizes its young citizens to strike out on one's own, live a fierce ambition, forest be damned, take as much space as your success can support, grow as rapidly as possible, even if it leads to an unhealthy life and premature death. The point of our cities is to raise big, tall trees, not provide a sheltered forest. After all, wood is wood, so the more, the better. Rarely does the system honor the youth's authentic selves, those parts that must be seen to feel true belonging. Rarely does the system hold a gaze that satisfies the need to be seen. The system doesn't care about nurturing balanced lives. It cares about cages and control. Speaking for myself, I came of age in our corporate cities. That caged invisibility sucked all of the life out of me, being in such an unnatural environment. I've had more jobs than I can count where I was doing exactly what society expected of me, and I was miserable, lonely, and unseen. And worst of all, I know I'm not alone in this city living. I remember once I met up with a friend and his new girlfriend in New York City. She was kind of giving me the eye, like, who is this clown? The conversation meandered as we caught up, and then I relayed a story about working in the corporate world. I described how so many times I'd be alone at work, crushed and bored. I'd walk out of the office towards the bathroom, and I'd have this distinct feeling that I could turn the corner and just vanish. And nobody would ever know. The girlfriend looked at me, half blank, half surprised, and said, "I thought I was the only one." Invisible in society. Our authentic selves are invisible, hiding in plain sight, just like the trees that didn't vanish into dust. The point here is not to shame. I'm not advocating that we no longer use wood for anything or stop eating vegetables. The point is to see if, even for just one moment, I can shape the deep-rooted view many have for our green friends of being something other than lives. Lives that are inherently worthy of our respect and dignity. In many ways, plants and trees set the stage for humans' eventual ascension on this planet and shaped our very existence. Wise scientists believe trees will be a key to reversing climate change. 1 trillion more trees. They literally make it easier for us to breathe. So going back to the trees in Washington, what more do they need to do? Meaning, what more do they need to show us before we accept their being? Once we recognize those beings on a societal level, then it seems inevitable, like Thanos, that the proper balance will be restored. For me, it took a personal connection before I understood, and I am filled with gratitude to have that. We, humans, have surrounded ourselves with the most beautiful life, beautiful friends waiting to meet you. Yet we practically auto-ignore their infinite nature on the daily, just as most of us fail to acknowledge that every person you meet this week is an infinite being. The trees should be seen, especially in this town. There is gladness and joy and ease blowing through the branches. If we quiet ourselves for just long enough, we can hear their generous souls surfing the wood-wide web, inviting us in. I can't say I know much about trees, but I do know they see only the authentic being of who you are. That is how they do just one thing. Just one thing, seeing only the authentic being of who we are. I pray we humans do everything that way. May it be so.